weather like this is made for a barbecue. And Congressman Luke Messer's got a pretty good one coming up this weekend. He joins us via the phone line. Good morning to you.
Hey, Johnny. Great to be on. You're right. We're certainly rooting for great weather. Somehow each year so far, I think this is our sixth annual barbecue out there. We've had pretty good weather, although, you know, the veterans that come each year will know there's a big giant tent too. So, but being on with you, I just can't help but be nostalgic. You know, I mean, I've been on this station as your local state representative, and I've been on as a member of the United States Congress. And now we're on because just in a few days, we're about to announce a candidacy for the United States Senate. It's only right that it be announced right here in Shelby County among all the people that really helped launch my career in public service when they supported me in the effort to be the local state legislator. So we're excited about Saturday and excited by all the potential and opportunity it brings.
Yeah, certainly that makes this barbecue a more emphasis, I guess, on this particular barbecue with everything becoming official, for lack of a better word, coming up. Take me to the considerations of, do I run for U.S. Senate? Is now the time to do so? And what have those conversations been like?
Well, as many of your listeners would know, Jennifer and Emma and Ava and Hudson and I do all this together. So it really was very much a family decision, in our case, in our family, a prayerful decision. And we've spent a lot of time and energy thinking about it. I think it really comes down to this. First, Indiana deserves a United States senator that looks out for them, not somebody that just talks Hoosier back in Indiana and then votes with the liberals out in Washington. And there's this sense among many out here at home in our state that not enough's getting done, that we've got to keep our promises and get things done. And, you know, Obamacare repeal just failed in the Senate by one vote. Joe Donnelly was that vote. But even some Republicans delayed, stopped Obamacare repeal. So we've got to figure out a way to bring conservatives together to work with the president and get President Trump's agenda passed. That's really my record. That's what the folks in Shelby County know, that we've, you know, gotten a lot done over the years in Indiana. And we need to bring that same spirit of leadership to the U.S. Senate.
That kind of falls in line with this next question. Certainly, even going back to government classes as a kid, I know the Senate, I know the House, I know how the levels of government break down. But let me phrase this question this way. What, as a lawmaker, is attractive about being in the Senate, or what does the Senate afford you that maybe being in the House does not? What would a transition like that be important for you?
Well, it's really not what's important for me, Johnny. It's what's important for Indiana. I mean, as you know, the United States Senate is a different kind of institution. Some of the longtime senators like to talk about it. It's designed to be the saucer under the coffee cup that cools off all the passions that come out of the House. From my perspective, I just want to see us get things done. Now, there is the practical reality that as a United States Senator, you have a ability to work on a broader portfolio of issues than you do in the House. I mean, you can work on education and financial services and foreign affairs and agriculture policy and a lot of other work. But I just look at the United States Senate and I don't see things getting done, and I feel like we're one vote away for making a really big difference. Joe Donnelly's a nice guy. He comes home in Indiana, talks like a conservative, but he goes out in Washington and he votes with the Elizabeth Warrens, the most liberal members of the United States Senate, 85%+ of the time. Hoosiers deserve a senator that votes with them 100% of the time, and that's why I'm running for the U.S. Senate.
Conservative and liberal, are those two words that we're still going to see be very up a subcategory of Republican and Democrat right now?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think embedded in your question, Johnny, is the sense that folks are frustrated with the partisanship. So am I.
Yes.
So folks are frustrated with the kind of constant argument, and so am I. It's just, look, Obamacare, any way you look at it, was liberal legislation, and the results have been disastrous for Indiana. 150,000 Hoosiers with income less than $50,000 a year. Let me say that again. 150,000 Hoosiers with income less than $50,000 a year paid taxes and penalties last year under Obamacare for not having health insurance. They can't afford that. If you talk to working families, and they've now seen their insurance premiums after Obamacare go up to as much as $1,000 a month for a deductible with a $10,000-plus deductible. That means that families are $20,000 or $30,000 out of pocket before they even get to their insurance, which means for most middle-class families, they don't have meaningful insurance at all. That's what Joe Donnelly voted for. That's what, frankly, the Senate allowed to stay the status quo when Obamacare repeal lost just a few days ago in the United States Senate. And that's unacceptable for Hoosiers. So what I think you're going to see in my service in the U.S. Senate is the same kind of things I think folks have seen locally in Shelby County when I was a state legislator and when I was a member of Congress, which is I'm going to stand on principle. I mean, I'm philosophically a conservative, but I'm also going to work with others to get things done. And, you know, maybe we can talk about it, but recently we were able to do that with our legislation that restored GI Bill benefits for the veterans that were going to school at IQT Tech.
Yeah, and we are, and I'm going to bring that topic specifically up with you here in a few moments, but we have made a note often on health care and certainly the Senate's role in what has occurred in recent days involving or not involving, in some cases, health care. If I ask you, and I'm going to tell you my opinion for whatever it's worth, I believe Obamacare will be repealed. Now, even with that being said, is the added problem in repealing Obamacare that effective replacement, or what those who voted against it felt was not effective replacement, isn't there? So what I'm saying is, has the Senate failed again in repealing Obamacare, or do they have to have a replacement on the table to get that repeal?
Well, first, you certainly want to have a transition period so that any changes that happen don't happen overnight. We've said, and I've continued to say, we can't pull the rug out from anybody, and so any transition needs to take place over a period of a couple years. You know, I think beyond that, there are millions of people who are on Obamacare. It's a relatively small percentage of the overall number of folks on insurance. The real problem are all the other folks on insurance who've seen their premiums spike because of Obamacare. But I do think you're right. We need to find a path, find a solution that takes us forward. The House bill was a big step in the right direction. It didn't include every provision that I would like to see, but it did get rid of all these mandates and penalties. It did create essentially what they call an invisible high-risk pool that would help make sure that everyone who was already sick was able to continue to get insurance, because that's important. Listen, that was a change that came under Obamacare that was good. I mean, it was never right that people who were sick couldn't get affordable health insurance, and so now we've been able to fix that. That's progress in the right direction, but what we've got to do then is move on to the other policies, medical malpractice reform that drives up insurance costs and health costs, allowing competition of insurance policies across state lines so that you can drop a lot of these mandates and penalties and people can get an insurance product that works for them. Had a lady in Greenfield, you know, call and tell me, said, well, you know, her premiums had gone up to $1,000 a month. She had a $10,000 policy with a $10,000 deductible. She was 53 years old, and her son, who lived with her, was 27. So she was 53. Her son was 27. And she told me, the good news is we both have maternity care in our policy, right? So neither of them were very likely to use it, right? And that's one of the challenges with these policies is they're embedded with so many mandates. They don't allow people to purchase health insurance that's tailored to them.
I my dad used to joke, and my dad farmed for much of his life. I just retired this past year, but my dad would joke that the health insurance he had, which, you know, they had health insurance, my parents did forever, but the health insurance they would buy as farmers, my dad goes, I'm going to have to really, really, really stay in the hospital a long, long time for this to ever pay off. And I think that's how a lot of people feel about the health care they have right now.
Yeah, I think that's right, Johnny. And that's in the old way of having high deductible policies was with a relatively low premium. And if you had some assets, that could make sense, right? You wanted that insurance to make sure you didn't lose your home or lose your property, but otherwise you would just cash flow it. Now, all of a sudden, that's the problem with one of the main problems of Obamacare. You have these very high deductible policies for folks who are paying an extremely high premium and not protecting those kind of assets. So in the end, they're almost bankrupt by the time they get to the deductible. And in that case, they have almost no meaningful insurance at all.
Hey, I wanted to ask you, related to healthcare, certainly everyone knows who Senator John McCain is, but his name came to the forefront even a little bit within this healthcare story in recent days. What insight can you give me on someone I have always considered to be very, very fascinating in Senator McCain and his decision to vote against, to vote no in the last Senate vote?
Well, you know, first let me say Senator McCain's an American hero. I mean, he was a longtime prisoner of war in Vietnam and has devoted a big chunk of his life to public service. He takes some positions and says some things I agree with. He takes other positions and says other things I don't agree with. I thought his vote, you know, against the Obamacare repeal last week was a bad vote. It was not the right thing to do for America. You know, he would say that he would love for us to bring a more bipartisan compromise to this, what he has said publicly, to pass Obamacare, which sounds great in theory, Johnny, but here's the problem. There was a vote on the Senate floor last week to debate Obamacare, to even open up debate and have a broad discussion of what we could do to change it. Democrats, including Indiana Senator Joe Donnelly, voted 48 out of 48 in lockstep against even having debate. There was a vote for repeal in the middle of that debate. Once the Republicans won the vote and moved forward, 48 out of 48 Democrats voted in lockstep to not repeal Obamacare. So there's a lot of talk back home in Indiana about trying to work together in a bipartisan way to get it done. But when you look at the real actions of folks across the aisle, you haven't seen that willingness. Listen, I've offered bills over time. I think we've even talked about on your show over the last 7 years to change and tweak parts of Obamacare. There have not been bipartisan efforts to pass the School Act. You may remember with Dave Adams, we were working on legislation that would exempt schools. Shelby County, Shelbyville school system has spent hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in additional costs under Obamacare. Schools, you know, in time when schools are cash strapped, they shouldn't be being taxed by their federal government and to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars because of this law. We worked on legislation that would restore the 40-hour work week and get away from the mandates in Obamacare that say, you know, that force many employers to keep people down at 29 hours a week. But no Democrats have signed on and been willing to work on that. So what we've got to do, I believe, is pass the main big reform, break the fever here, and then I think I really do believe on the backside of that, there's an opportunity to come together on some broader solutions.
Congressman Luke Messer with us. He will announce formally his run for U.S. Senate coming up at a special barbecue in Morristown this weekend. I would be wrong if I did not bring up Korea with you. And you know, we do everything, it often seems, in lists or compare this to that. So I'm going to ask you this question. From the height of the Cold War, when Americans looked up and saw Sputnik floating over and wanted to think, what are the Russians doing? How does the U.S. and Korea and the back and forth, especially with a specific site in Guam now being played around, how does that compare to where we were at the height of the U.S. and Russian tensions?
Yeah, boy, Johnny, that's a fascinating question. I mean, of course, in the midst of the Cold War, you were dealing less with a rogue regime and more with a true world power that had an opportunity to change the planet. And, of course, you and I grew up in a world where really folks had a palpable understanding every day that if things went wrong in the Cold War, it could all end because there were enough warheads pointed at each other that that it would, you know, have planetary implications. But the situation in North Korea is a very serious one. They now have demonstrated the capability of getting a missile that would land even on America's shores, let alone someplace like Guam. And there is increasing intelligence that they're working on nuclear warheads to strap to those missiles. It's not clear that yet that they have that precise technology. I believe President Trump is right to take a very strong posture towards North Korea and to provide absolute clarity about where the boundaries are. One of the real problems of the Obama administration's leadership and foreign policy was that it was often rooted in ambiguity. Well, many of these rogue actors, they flourish in ambiguity because they will push things as far as they're allowed to push them. So I think we do need to be clear. I think it's a tremendously dangerous situation. And of course, we need to cooperate with others in that region. The president has said often China has a role to play and needs to show more leadership. But if China won't lead, we're going to have to act too. We cannot allow a missile from North Korea to ever end up on our shores.
It often seemed, even if you want to talk about Rocky IV, like it literally was Russian people against U.S. people. This really does feel, though, more like it is the North Korean leader off there on a pedestal by himself trying to flex muscle against everybody else. And I'm not sure, not that he needs it, the rest of the country's in there with him.
Well, yeah, I think it's a very different kind of culture than anything that we would understand here in America. I mean, there are no meaningful way of free people, and those that have escaped from North Korea will describe what is almost a cult-like culture where folks are, you know, virtually brainwashed to a way that of life that, you know, would seem unimaginable to most of us. I mean, it is probably the world's greatest example between North Korea and South Korea, the difference between centralized communist control and what happens in a flourishing capitalist democracy. I mean, the folks that live in South Korea are of the very same gene pool and yet are inches taller than the folks that live in North Korea because of the poverty and starvation there. I mean, it's and that's just one example of the extraordinary differences between the two countries.
A couple more before I let you go. You mentioned it earlier. I definitely wanted to talk about it. The law, or the bill rather, that deals with vets and education, and obviously what ended up not being continued education for many people who saw some of these institutions close up out of nowhere.
Yeah. Well, again, I share the frustration of many that we need to get more done on the big ticket items, but there are lots of bills that are passing, and a great one passed just a week or two back with the GI Bill reforms we were able to pass and get signed into law. That legislation included my legislation to restore GI Bill benefits for all the veterans that lost those benefits when ITT Tech closed. We've been working on this issue for, you know, a couple of years now. First, people wouldn't get their Pell Grants restored. We were able just through the administration to get that change done. But with this change in the law now, everyone who lost their GI Bill benefits because ITT Tech closed will get them restored. That's only fair. These veterans didn't have anything to do with the closure of that school. It was time for us to do something about it. And I was proud in a very bipartisan vote we were able to get that done.
One more before I let you go. As you officially make the announcement, going to make that run for U.S. Senate, it's always interesting when these transitions come into play to watch the next dominoes that fall. What you're announcing is going to have a great impact on especially the seat that you're leaving in the Congress.
Sure, Johnny. You know, it's important that we have a strong congressional leader fill that seat, and I'll certainly see that as one of my highest priorities once we get to the other side of this primary. You know, I'm confident with all the great people we have in our area that we're going to find somebody who'll do a great job that will step forward. So I'm confident there. I do want to say to your listeners, if they haven't already RSVP, they can check it out on www.lukemesser.com. That's where, you know, most everybody probably knows where the Caldwell property is, but that's got the address and the time. We're going to kick it off, try to get there a little before 1, because the big announcement's at 1:30, and there's going to be hundreds and hundreds of people there. So it'll be a lot of fun. We hope people can come by.
What's on the menu?
You know, always chicken, man. You know, that's always a big part of it. There's other things too, but I'm a big fried chicken guy. So that's where I tend to gravitate.